This leader is provided to permit the projectionist to complete adjustment of focus and sound level before the film begins.
Today we're going to talk about March Madness opening round, NFL free agency, and of course, looking forward to the 2024 baseball season. It's March 26, 2024.
Initiate explosion in 3, 2, 1.
That's right. Welcome. It is the Josh Lamb Sportsball Explosion, the JLSBX. Welcome and happy morning to everybody out there, especially all you sports ballers that won or lost in your brackets over the weekend. We're going to break that down in just a second. Man, I'm feeling good today. We are just 48 hours away from the baseball season. We're going to talk about that today. Talk a little NFL football with my main man, Dennis Brown, here in just a second. This is the JLSBX, the show where we answer the question,
what in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Well, a lot is going on here, and I'm thinking a lot of you are either tickled pink about what happened in your brackets, or you're like me, where you have this reaction.
Fuck, motherfucker!
I promised my sons I'd throw in fewer sound effects for this show. We're going to get rolling here in just a second on the March Madness talk. A few things before we break down all 3,000 games, which is not true. A couple things leading into this. I did notice that the SEC, which claims its superiority over small teams, not so much anymore, especially when they're bounced in the first round. So big shout out to the SEC on that one. Big shout out to both my boys, Kingston and Caius, for their brackets that are still doing well. At this time right now, to talk about it all, I'm going to bring in my man, Logan Pierce. Logan, what's up, buddy?
Hey, what's up, man? How's it going?
Doing okay. How is your brackets looking? You still got your Final Four intact?
Women's brackets.
Hold on. What's kind of mean?
About third out of fourth place, you know, just not really looking good, but
yeah,
you know, men's have UConn, women's have Iowa, so you know, pretty much both intact, so see how it goes.
I got three out of my four remaining in the men's Final Four, which generally is not good at the round of 16. You should have all four intact, but you never know. And I have UConn as the winner, which 25% of America does also, so it's not like really I could steal one there, you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
But just to be curious, who do you have in your men's Final Four?
My men's Final Four. Let's see here. I have UConn, Illinois, UNC, and Baylor. So
just like me, Baylor fucked you.
Yep, pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, that's how that goes. I do like your pick there with Illinois. That is taking a risk. I like them. I think it's in the they are in the bracket with where Creighton would be, right? Because I believe that's my fourth team. I put a lot of stock into the Big East, and I like Creighton headed into this thing, and they escaped one the other day, and they're still alive. But yeah, Baylor has no excuse for that loss the other night.
No excuse whatsoever right now.
So a lot of times what drives this thing is parity. And right now, we don't have a lot of low seeds hanging around. The lowest seeds are North Carolina State at 11, and there's also Clemson at 6. Other than that, you got just everything's expected. 1, 2, 3, 4, and a 5 in there. You know what I mean? So not a lot of parity.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing I did notice with those two seeds being Clemson and North Carolina State, the ACC has four teams still hanging out there. That's the most out of any conference. You think the ACC was overlooked headed into this thing?
I think they were, yes and no, because I think with ACC, probably obviously UNC, they're I feel like UNC is kind of overhyped, but obviously with Duke, if they have John Shire, who's obviously won championships with Duke, then people are going to choose Duke. But I feel like big fans of Duke, but I don't know. But we have a big ACC bias, but
Duke is always the team I reference when people do office pools and Marge from accounting goes, Duke, I've heard of Duke. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they're always going to be there. I can't recall who they're heading into. Doesn't matter. Looking back, but over the weekend, the conferences, ACC representing the Big East with three. And the Big 12, which I still think was the best conference in basketball this year, still representing with Iowa State and Houston barely. They should not have been that close in that game. What are your thoughts?
Oh, no. That was way too close. With the went to overtime, I totally thought they were going to lose against Texas A&M. But I was not going to lie. I was kind of hoping that Texas A&M would have pulled up the upset. Of course, going to overtime, thinking, watching their work, like, oh, yeah, this is definitely going to go in Texas A&M's favor. But then, of course, you know, once again goes to overtime, it's a whole new ball game. So you think anything can happen. And then, of course, the best team wins with Houston. So,
yeah. And sometimes for a team like Houston, it's a blessing in disguise. It's good to get that ugly type of game out of your system in round two or three before you're getting into the final four. Which I thought their ugly game was against Iowa State, the Big 12 championship. But, you know, moving forward, if they should pair with UConn, I still like UConn to defeat them, as good as Houston is. Speaking of Texas A&M, I have this thing I like to call non-conspiracy theories. And these are, you know, in the world of sports, you got everybody with their conspiracy theories. But these are, I call non-conspiracy theories. And that is when Trev Alberts leaves Nebraska for Texas A&M, it is a non-conspiracy theory that they paired Nebraska and Texas A&M in both the men's and women's side. I found that kind of funny. And then Texas knocking off Nebraska on the men's side.
Mm-hmm. Same so thing. Absolutely, definitely good theory, 100%.
Yeah. Other ones that I noticed, pairing Creighton and Oregon in the same bracket where you had Dana Altman, the former coach of Creighton there. These people, they know what they're doing when they're pairing this stuff up. Same thing with the Iowa Ladies putting LSU in their region. This is not an accident, you know. The same, mm-hmm. you know, also putting Kansas State on the women's side or in the bracket with Iowa, one of the teams that defeated Iowa. So I always find it funny when there's the moaning and groaning, and it's like, well, they know what they're doing. It's like taking out of the WWF, you know, handbook. We're aiming for the, you know, drop the Stone Cold music and here comes LSU, you know, in this round, that type of thing. It's all about ratings. We're going to get some.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. I know, like, when I was watching the bracket release with my friends, when we saw Iowa's region, of course, I kind of had a feeling LSU would be in a potential rematch. And then I didn't know you would have Colorado, you would have Kansas State, you'd have LSU. They were just building up everyone against Iowa. Of course, I've seen people say this is probably the toughest region in the history, really, like, against Iowa. It's all odds against Iowa at this point, really. So
yeah, but I like it. I mean, and I think we all enjoy it. It's you know, must see TV. If I was going to do this, they got to go through the gauntlet before they get to, let's not kid ourselves, South Carolina awaiting them in the final for that rematch. Continuing on the men's side, before the tournament even started, I looked at this a couple rounds ahead. This week's matchup, the Sweet 16 matchup, Illinois versus Iowa State, I circled that to be probably the best game of the tournament. Would I be wrong?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, definitely. I feel like because you have the number two scoring offense in Illinois versus a number two defense in Iowa State. So it's definitely going to be a really good head-to-head match. So.
And you have Illinois in, winning that in that region, right?
Yep, I have Illinois winning. Yep, but it could be kind of biased because I'm a big Hawkeye fan, so it's kind of bad to say, but I really don't like Iowa State. But kind of sound biased, but I'm all Iowa, so
that's okay. Speaking of which, I have noticed over the past couple days, the viewership of women's basketball is just off the charts, and there seems to be this rhetoric of we're here, we've arrived, blah 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 blah. Do you believe that to be so, or is this bullshit? When Caitlin's gone, so go the ratings.
I think Caitlin definitely had a big mark with women's basketball viewership, with younger kids like trying to get her autograph, trying to like aspire to be here, like younger kids, like younger boys, younger girls, like looking up to her. I mean, once she leaves, like, of course it's going to leave like a big mark, but then you have, the freshman from USC, Juju Watkins, who people say could possibly break Caitlin Clark's record. So I feel like women's basketball is in a great future. That's for sure.
Okay. Right. I mean, I'm kind of the skeptic, but I mean, I'm looking at Carver Hawkeye, you know, selling out the place at $300 a ticket. And that's just, that's absolutely ludicrous compared to, you know, the opposite direction, which is 100 to 500 to 1,000 tickets being sold at your common women's basketball game. It would be nice if it does put a little tension on the sport and bump the numbers up a little bit. You're not going to get Caitlin numbers everywhere, but it would be nice for for the sport, especially get a little bit of the TV draw on there. Go ahead.
Oh, no, you're good. So I was going to say, like, of course, talking about Iowa, once Caitlin leaves, I feel like that might be maybe some less people watching, but I feel like with Caitlin being in Iowa, that kind of like drew more people to watch Iowa women's basketball, and like seeing some of the recruits coming in, then I feel like some people will probably draw more attention to women's basketball, but we can't really tell until the future. But I feel like there's a good future for Iowa women's basketball. But
yeah. And I'm one of those oddballs that I've actually have been watching women's basketball for the past 10, 20 years. And that's probably in part to my love and fascination with Gino Auriemma and what he's done at UConn. So I actually have, you know, I've watched, and, you know, I'm not watching your random game in December, but I'm not just watching a random game in December on the men's side either. But you know, in the past 10, 20 years, as we get to March Madness on both sides, I have been watching because it has been good basketball when you get down to your top eight and your final four and so on and so forth.
Yeah, absolutely. It definitely gets way better as it goes on. But yeah, it should definitely be way more interesting. But yeah, for sure.
Any other takeaways from the opening weekend of March Madness?
I probably say my biggest takeaway on the men's side is definitely Oakland definitely beating Kentucky. That's definitely one of the biggest headlines, in my opinion.
Well, for me, it's a little bit of schadenfreude because I'm not a big John Calipari fan. And anytime I could see him and his paid team, which I could say now because of the nil thing, but whenever I could see him and his one-and-dones come in and get rolled by a small conference school, it just brings me joy. So, I would say, would you say probably the biggest upset of the opening round was it Oakland over Kentucky, or do you think it was Yale over Auburn?
Oh, that's tough. Yale over Auburn was pretty upsetting, but I'd probably say obviously Oakland over Kentucky, because anytime you have John Calipari losing, anytime the first round is definitely an upset, no matter what the seed is, because they're obviously a blue blood. So yeah. Anytime you beat them in the first round, it's obviously a win.
I think Auburn losing did more destruction to people's brackets because people were pretty high on them entering the end of the season. So, but that's the whole fun and the nature of it. Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of low seeds around, but there is good basketball to be had. All right. Well, thanks for chiming in on the March Madness. Hey, we're going to take a quick break. You up for talking some baseball here in a bit?
Oh, absolutely.
All right. We'll get right to it. We're going to take a quick break. When I come back, I'm going to talk a little football here with Dennis Brown. Be right back.
Don't go anywhere, anywhere at all. We'll be right back after this very important thing, or whatever.
Get your mouth shut. Get your mouth shut, jerk. Dick you. See that? That's your IQ, buddy. Zero.
Hold up, turn over, son.
No, I'd rather talk to him.
Mike, get the- I know I'm smarter than that son.
We now return back to the show.
That's right, we're back to JLSBX, the Josh Lamb Sports Ball Explosion. Thank you, Logan Pierce, for joining me talking about a little bit of March Madness. He'll return here in just a bit. We're going to talk some baseball. I want to shift gears to NFL free agency real quick. This is from a story from a week or two ago. The Russell Wilson pickup by the Steelers and Justin Fields as well. And it just reminded me of a thing that I love so much about the NFL, and probably you do too. As the cliche goes, baseball is America's pastime, but NFL is America's passion. You can believe that or not, take it how you want. But it is what it is. Here's the thing I love about the NFL. Now, you ready? The NFL is a socialist system. I know you're all taught to hate that word, but let's think about it. You've got this giant TV money pie, and it's spread evenly to the 32 teams in the NFL. Meaning, in base terms, everybody can spend the same amount of money, just depending on how they want to spend it. Okay? In other words, all teams with a 17-game schedule, all teams are built to go 8-8-1, right down the middle. And the beauty of the whole system is it rewards the smart and it penalizes the dumb. And I really like that system. Even though my team is the Washington Redskins and they're always on the butt end of that system because of the dumb choices they've made for the past 2.5 decades. I accept that. Hopefully with new leadership, that'll be turned around. Either way, I like the idea that here's $20. You go feed a family of four, and you go feed a family of four. One guy gets some rice, some vegetables, some lentils, some chicken or beef stock, comes back, makes it happen. The other guy buys a 16-ounce T-bone steak and a 2-liter of Coca-Cola, and hopefully we could split it up and everybody will enjoy it. That's the Washington Redskins' end. That's the Chicago Bears' end. As where teams like the Steelers and the Patriots over the past 20 years, no surprise that these teams are always in the playoffs, always getting close to the Super Bowl, where some teams don't even get near it at all. It's because they're rewarded for their wise moves. The biggest example of this would be the Bears and the Steelers in this current free agency deals that were just made. The Bears, a few years ago, I'm going to say 2-3 years ago, traded several picks, including a first rounder, to the Giants to move up to draft Justin Fields, a guy who's not been proven to be an elite quarterback. Now, yes, he put up elite numbers at Ohio State, but let's look at his talent pool around him. But that doesn't matter. It's what they gave up to give him. In other words, look at the other team on the other side of the spectrum. The Steelers are giving the Bears a 6th-round pick in next year's draft for Justin Fields. Same player. Correction, not the same player. A player with 2.5 years NFL experience under his belt, and they're getting him for a late round pick and a very small salary. The Steelers are the team that can feed a family of four. The Bears cannot. Now, they could put a bite of steak in your mouth for a couple chews, and you'll be all right. But you won't be full, and you're not going to the Super Bowl anytime soon. And if only I had somebody to talk about this with and post and share my gripes. Oh, wait, joining us, Dennis Brown. Dennis, what's up, my man?
Not much. Same old stuff. How are you?
Little NFL talk. So it wasn't but just merely hours, literally hours after we talked last time, the Steelers pick up Russell Wilson. First, let's talk about that before we talk about Fields. Picking up Russell Wilson, I think with the Steelers organization being the way that they are and Mike Tomlin being as good a coach as he is, I think this is an excellent pickup. I'd be interested to see the pieces that they put around him. I don't know if this quite makes them a Super Bowl contender or juggernaut. Again, it depends on the pieces, but they are always a playoff team, and he's a winning quarterback. I think this is a great pickup for them. What say you?
I do too as well. I think Russell Wilson still has a lot of gas in the tank. I thought he played really well in Denver last year. I don't know why Sean Payton hates him so much. I don't really think it's because of his play, maybe a little more because of his personality.
Yeah,
I think it was a really good deal.
There was weird frictions going on there last year. So, I agree. It has to be something internally, something like that. Russell Wilson was brought in there to be a winner and put Denver over the hump. I mean, they, in the past few years since Peyton Manning left, you know, they still have had a decent defense that has carried them in games. They haven't been able to move the ball, and then their draft picks have never at quarterback haven't panned out. So yeah, I don't get the thought process there with Denver on that one. So again, it, like you said, it must be something personally.
Well, I think it has to be. He threw 26 touchdowns with only 8 interceptions. And who are they going to get to replace him, really? So they're probably going to go in the draft looking. I think they should have just held on to him. But
I think so too. But some of these NFL teams. And also, he's like in his 13th season, which, depending on who you are, some GMs, some coaches may think that that's, you know, older than dirt at this point, because not everybody's Tom Brady. So maybe
I think they used to, but it seems like now with today's rules that, you know, when you can't get, you know, blindsided all the time like Joe Montana and the fellas did back then. Yeah. It just seems like everybody can play quite a bit longer. I mean, Drew Brees went quite a while before his arm fell off.
Right. And the rules are geared towards the quarterback and the offense. And, you know, so there's extra protections there for them to help them play a little bit longer. As far as the Steelers having Russell Wilson, I think the AFC North is now the most interesting division out of the 8 divisions, because really out of the 4 teams there, they really could flop any of those teams first through 4th place. Really, they could.
Absolutely, they could. The thing is that in the AFC North, that I think over most divisions, even when those teams are bad, they beat each other.
Yeah. And last year, I mean, you had Baltimore as the one seed that won it. This is with Cincinnati losing Joe Burrow in November. The Browns were a decent team, just needed to move the ball a little bit better. I think that they're probably headed in the right direction. I really see that division could be all 4 teams within 3 games of each other when it's all said and done. One of the teams winning 11 and the last place team winning 8 or 9. It really could be that good.
Well, two of the best defenses in the league are in that division with between Cleveland and the Ravens. And Pittsburgh always has a really good defense.
Yeah.
I don't know what they, I don't think their running game is as good as it could be, but they'll be formidable. I don't think they'll win that division, but they'll probably make the playoffs.
It's quite possible the AFC North could put three teams in the playoffs. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah, with Cincy, Baltimore, Pittsburgh. You could even put even a Cleveland. I mean, with the extra wild card team, there could be a fourth team. It's not that too far-fetched to think of.
If Deshaun Watson plays a lot better, Cleveland is scary. Their defense is one of the top three or four defenses in the league.
The AFC North, look out. And then continuing on with our talk about Pittsburgh, picking up Justin Fields right after getting Wilson, this is an interesting move. Now, from the reports so far, this is not going to be a quarterback competition. They have said, and according to Justin Fields, he has agreed with this, he is there to learn and take over the reins, not so much compete right from the get-go. Do you buy any of that?
I think he was cheap enough to give it a try. I don't think Justin Fields is in any position to make any demands, that's for sure.
No.
So,
and
he played terribly, and they gave him every opportunity in the world to succeed. If I was running that organization, Russell Wilson would be the starter from jump.
Yeah, from Jump Street. Now, this is two completely polar end teams in the NFL, the Bears and the Steelers. I have been blathering for years that one of the beauty of the NFL is that everybody is built to go 8-8-1. It's the smart teams thrive and the dumb teams lose. And look at what we got here. We got the Bears, who gave up first-round picks for Justin Fields. 3 years later, they're getting back a fifth-round or conditional sixth-round for next year's draft. That's all Pittsburgh's giving up for Justin Fields, who's only 25 years old.
Yeah, I mean, at least they admitted their mistake. That's all you can say. I mean, the Niners sold the farm to get Trey Lance, and they ended up getting a fourth-round pick out of him. He was the third pick overall. They passed on Justin Fields for a reason. They didn't think that he could read defenses very well, and that's why they passed on him initially in that draft, because the Niners were looking at him hard because of his arm talent, but he just doesn't have it between the ears. I don't think he'll ever be really good, but I think for what Pittsburgh's paying, I mean, it's why not? I mean, he's practically free. So, you know, who knows? Maybe something sparks in him and he turns out to be good, but I highly doubt it. I think he's not even a career backup. He'll probably flame out eventually.
I agree. When that draft happened and he was coming out in it, a lot of people were sold on him because of what he had done at Ohio State. Well, let's look at your talent pool around you at Ohio State. And Ohio State, over the past decade, has been putting out bum after bum at the quarterback position. You know,
they're notorious for it.
Yeah, it was with C.J. Barnett, Dwayne Haskins, the other guy.
God rest his soul.
Yes. So, I mean, and the other thing is, too, like you said, between the ears maybe is the issue with Fields. I mean, that's a hard thing to do, is to quarterback an NFL team. So it's not like I'm dogging on the guy that he can't just do something simple. I mean, there's only 32 people that can have a starting job come this September. It's a hard thing to do. But I reference back his the Big Ten championship game before he left for the draft was against Northwestern. Now it's Northwestern, and he threw four picks in that game, in a game where they won only by a touchdown. So again, you think of the athletic talent on the Ohio State side versus, you know, the Harvard of Illinois, in Northwestern, they were a three touchdown favorite for a reason, and they did not. That's a lot to read into one game, but I thought it was important.
He has all the ability and the talent. He has a crazy, crazy big arm.
Yeah.
But that's really all he has. I mean, we've all watched him play. He's about as mistake prone as a quarterback can be.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
I think if you're a Bears fan, you should be rejoicing today that your team actually admitted that they made a huge fucking mistake and they are attempting to correct it. Ryan Poles is the new general manager. I don't think he wanted to deal with it. So Caleb Williams doesn't really want to go to Chicago, but it looks like he is.
Yeah. No, I don't think anybody really wants to go to that organization. Once a proud franchise, but we're talking 8 years ago. So, and it's been a long time since they were in the Devin Hester Super Bowl there. So we're looking at almost 20 years on that success. But the Bears aren't alone. There's plenty of shithead organizations in the NFL that make these mistakes, you know, including my team. But we shall see. Maybe it'll pan out. Also in the NFL, speaking of my shitty team, have you seen this with the Redskins putting together the 2016 All-Star team, but in 2024? Interesting choices here, picking up Bobby Wagner, Austin Eckler, others to name a few. It looks like they're going the veteran route. Has this ever really worked in any sport?
When you just pick up a bunch of free agent veterans?
Cherry picking veterans, yeah.
I mean, only if your team is already pretty loaded and you're just kind of filling spots. If you're... We know this doesn't work. We've seen, especially in the NBA, they do this all the time. I mean, remember when the Lakers, you know, put together a bunch of veterans with Kobe, like Steve Nash and Dwight Howard and shit? That was a complete and utter failure. And
I try to forget those years as best I can because, yeah, it was just shit. I mean, it's the sign of a desperate organization. Is what it looks like, and it is. Trying to get Steve Nash and Dwight Howard a ring in L.A. with Kobe when Dwight Howard clearly did not want to be there. So, I mean, you know.
And Steve Nash was injured the whole time. And it's kind of the same. I think with the Redskins, they got new ownership. They want to put something good on the field to kind of give the people hope a little bit. Make sure they're packing that stadium, knowing that they're going to try as hard as they can to put a winning brand out there. So I don't blame them for doing it. Is it going to get them anywhere? I don't think so, because I think Dallas and Philadelphia, for the time being, own that division. I don't see Washington. They probably won't even make the playoffs next year, but they probably will take a step in the right direction.
Yeah, anything post Dan Snyder is a step in the right direction, really, with that organization. Got a little exercise for you. This was crafted by Kingston Lamb, who misses you dearly, sir. He was rocking his new Coors Light hat yesterday for whatever reason. I don't know, maybe St. Patrick's Day or something like that. These damn kids, I'm telling you. We got five questions for you. And these are yes or no questions. You can elaborate on either one of them if you choose to. And it's a little exercise here. We're going to call Marv or Steve. Marv being the
yes.
And Steve being the
oh, hell no.
So, without further ado, question number one. Does pineapple belong on pizza?
Steve.
You're going Steve?
Yeah.
Not even with ham or Canadian bacon, just no at all. No,
no, it's a
Steve.
Disgusting. It doesn't belong there.
Okay. We're going Steve.
Oh, hell no.
Question two. Does Roger Clemens belong in the Hall of Fame?
Absolutely.
That's a Marv for you?
That's a Marv.
For me, it's a total Marv only when he finally admits his steroid use. And he, and don't, you know, we're not going to put alleged in front of that thing. I mean, the son of a bitch, you can't throw like that at the age that he was the last time. You know, what was it, Houston? He's like,
yeah,
throwing a 1.35 ERA or some shit. You know, come on. Especially the way he throws, which is very aggressive.
Well, remember, Andy Pettit misremembers.
That's correct. So we're going to go Marv on that. Does Roger Clemens belong in the Hall of Fame? And that is?
Yes.
Okay. Question three. Is the Chiefs dynasty over?
You know, if God cares about anything, yes, it should be. I hope so. I hate the Chiefs. And I think the NFL wants them to. They're looking forward to talking about this three-peat all year.
Because it's never happened?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Niners had a pretty good shot after they pounded Denver in the Super Bowl the next year. We almost made it to play Buffalo, but...
That yeah. NFC Championship game against the Giants was that was a great game. I mean,
Joe Montana got taken out, and then by Leonard Marshall, and then Roger Craig ends up fumbling the ball, and that was all she wrote. They kicked a 40-yarder to go to the Super Bowl. We were fucking right there. Still angers me.
In that 3-year span, and I'm just going off my, you probably know better than I do, but in that 3-year span of winning Super Bowl 23, 24, and almost 25, what did they lose like in those three seasons? Like a total of 8 games, maybe?
Yeah. Well, we only lost 2 games in 89. It was the year we played the Bengals. Our record wasn't the greatest.
Was it maybe 10-6 or something?
Something like that. I know Bill Walsh was bouncing back and forth between Steve Young and Joe Montana that season. And that's when he went to Mike Holmgren and some of the other staff, and they voted on what to do. And to a man, they all said that Joe needs a start. And then they only lost like 1 game between then and the Super Bowl.
Yeah. But those the near three-peat with the Niners, those were incredible teams.
Yeah, it's about as close as we got.
Yeah. The Patriots were so close so many times there over the past 20 years, too. It is so hard to do, but yeah. So, and by the way, to clarify the dynasty, I mean winning Super Bowls again. So,
I mean, as long as Patrick Mahomes is there, you have to assume. And he just took less money too, so now he's restructured his contract again for the second time to free up a bunch of money for him. So it looks like he's going the route of Tom Brady.
Yeah, well, when you have a kajillion dollars, the right thing to do if you want to keep winning is share the wealth. You know,
if you ever want to catch Tom, I mean, you don't have much choice, because if you take all the money, you're not gonna have much to work with.
Right. And they used some of that money over the weekend. They picked up a free agent receiver. The name escapes me on who they just picked up. And
they paid Chris Jones.
Yeah. Yep, you got to pay the man. Yep. So, is the Chiefs dynasty over? We're going to go.
Oh, hell no.
Thank you, Steve. Question 4. Is LeBron a top 3 Laker of all time?
No.
I think he put that question in there just to piss us off.
I think he did too.
Yeah, because it's. I'm gonna give this 2 Steves.
Oh hell no! Oh hell no!
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I don't even want it. I don't even want them to put a dumb fucking statue of him out front.
I saw that, and that's just absurd. Get the fuck out of here. You're gonna have statues. Have a statue of Kobe. Have a statue of Kareem. Have a statue of Magic. I could probably go 3 more before LeBron being with the Lakers. So,
absolutely.
He did that just to piss us off.
the logo.
Correct.
Yeah,
yeah,
he did.
Fuck, I'd even take James Worthy statue. You know?
Yeah.
All right, and the final one. Is Stone Cold Steve Austin the GOAT? I'm going to go Marv on this.
This is difficult because I think there's three distinct people that could possibly be the GOAT. And I think all three of them might be GOATs for different reasons, but I think it's Ric Flair, Hulk Hogan, or it's Steve Austin. And me personally, my heart is with Hulk Hogan. If you ask Hulk Hogan, he says it's Ric Flair. He thinks it's Ric Flair. So I think Austin, I don't, it's hard to say that he blew wrestling up because wrestling did go in the toilet for the WWE when Austin did bring it back from the ashes. I mean, he pretty much single-handedly won the Monday Night Wars.
Yeah. No, yeah.
Because of how popular he did get. But Hulk Hogan, man, I mean, our generation especially, it's the reason most of us even watch wrestling. The guy was as famous as anybody on the planet.
Yeah.
In the mid-80s to the 90s.
No, if ever you see one of those like big drawings or like collages of the 80s, you're going to have Alf and you're going to have Mr. T and you're going to have Hulk Hogan. I mean, he was the 80s, you know.
Absolutely. I find it's hard for me to put anybody over Hulk Hogan.
So Stone Cold, not the GOAT?
Not the GOAT.
Oh, Hulk hell Hogan's no. GOAT.
So we're going to give Steve a Steve is what you're saying. I got you.
Yeah.
All right. Any final words, my friend?
On the last thing on the Pittsburgh thing, I do think that with them picking up Justin Fields, I think it was a really smart move. They don't have anything to lose, and you never know. I don't even think he's as good as RG3 was, so I don't think it'll work out. But the Russell Wilson thing was brilliant. I think they'll be really good for it.
Okay. And that's the fun part of the NFL is it dominates the headlines even when it's not in its season.
Yeah, well, until LeBron James goes away, the NBA sucks.
I'm with you on that. All right, my friend. We'll talk to you next time.
Yes, sir.
The Bears still suck. 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 They really, 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 really suck. Yes, the Bears still suck.
You're listening to the Josh Lamb Sports Ball Explosion. Now back to the show, you handsome devils.
That's right, we're back to JLSBX. Welcoming back to the show, Logan Pierce. Logan, we're going to switch gears on to baseball at this point. Opening day, just a mere 48 hours away. Is this one of the greatest days of the year, no matter what?
Oh, absolutely. I always treat this day as a major holiday. I always try and take it off work whenever I can because, you know, watching baseball all day, every day is always a holiday in my book. So,
yeah, it's, you know, and try not to be cliche and romantic about it, but the old cliche, everyone's in first place, except for the Mets. We seem to always be at 0-0, still, you know, a game out of first place on opening day. That was called a fucking joke. That was called a fucking joke. Yeah, there you go.
Hey, you said not me. So yeah, trust me, I know.
I'll do the Mets jokes. Thank you very much.
leave it all to you.
Thank you. Usually when breaking in an opening day or doing a baseball kickoff show or something like that, I would like to head right into talking about the offseason, things of that nature. But you know what? There's no need to now because there's only one big story out there before the first pitch is thrown, and that was both Ohtani's monstrous deal that he signed with the Dodgers, and then now the stuff going on with Ohtani and the gambling allegations against his interpreter slash him. What do you make of this whole story?
Well, obviously, me being a Cubs fan, I was hoping that Ohtani would go to the Cubs, but knowing he'd probably get a monster deal, of course, the Dodgers can make, they can pay wherever they want, and seeing how much they can defer, then they can do that. But obviously the real story too right now is kind of how you said with the whole gambling thing. Like,
so
that
he could,
kind of like took a whole turn from him.
So he claims or has claimed that the interpreter was doing this without his knowledge. Do you believe him at all? Referring to Ohtani?
I don't believe it, because honestly, I thought about it. Why would it take 4 years for the whole thing to be addressed? Was it a whole cover-up? I think it was, because using his interpreter to bet for him, like, also the whole $4.5 million, how can you not see that come out of your account too? Like, it just all doesn't add up to me, honestly. But
yeah, it's, you know, even when you have close to $1 billion coming your way, $4.5 million is a nice chunk, is a chunk of change you would notice. If I was to play devil's advocate and say that Ohtani is innocent in this whole thing, it does speak to the culture of some of these guys taking advantage of athletes, you know, because it's so, sports are so competitive that it's a year-long sport, no matter what sport you're playing, that a lot of these guys would like to think, I've put people I could trust in situations to take care of the things I don't need to worry about. So it would be unfortunate if someone was doing this to take advantage of him. I get it. The general public will be like, well, boo-hoo, $4.5 million to a guy that's making, you know, $700, you know, but still... Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that this something down the road couldn't happen for whoever. I mean, we've heard of these stories before. If he did, in fact, place these bets himself, what do you think the Major League Baseball would do, if anything at all?
Personally, if everything came out and then he actually did bet on baseball, I personally hope that he gets the Pete Rose treatment. And then he gets banned from baseball, which might sound bad because he's honestly the face of baseball right now. But of course, like, if you're going to have Pete Rose and then have him bet on baseball and then have him get blacklisted, then might as well have the same thing with Shohei Ohtani. But of course, he's the face of baseball, so you never know what Manfred's going to do. But if you're going to make it fair.
If somehow he's tied to this and his hands are dirty of it, I don't see Manfred doing much of anything at all. And it, in the culture of betting and sports, has changed monstrously since, you know, Pete Rose 35 years ago. I mean, Christ, if you're watching a baseball game today, when you break to commercial, it's all for betting sites anyway. So, I mean, the stigma of sports betting has been lifted. I couldn't see more than a 50 game suspension if it were to come true, you know. But if you're Pete Rose, and who's still alive, still with us, if you're Pete Rose, this is now the time where you get feisty about it, Charlie Hustle, and be like, hey, look, you think now I can get in the fucking Hall of Fame at this point? You know, who gives a shit if I bet on my shitty Reds or not in 1988? I think we're past that. That's right. I mean,
what was that? Sorry.
I'm just saying, if you're Pete Rose, now's the time, you know, get vocal about it. Be like, hey, I think we can let this go now and get me in the Hall of Fame. I just think it's, you know, and that's a whole other topic right there. But I mean, with Pete having over 4,000 hits and not in. So, but I'll leave that up to him and his estate if he wants to fight for that. Looking at the upcoming baseball season, so I'm going to list you some teams and some numbers, and I want you to tell me over or under. And if you want to elaborate on any of them, you can. You ready?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, this is the win totals for the following teams, and don't worry, I didn't. We're not going to talk about all 30 of them because who gives a shit about what the Royals are going to do? But at the top of the list, I always find it fascinating when you have the team at the top of, and the thing is too with these betting sites, who tend to be pretty freaking accurate on this stuff. The top, and this, I think they've been at the top of the list 3 of the last 6 years. It's the Dodgers at 102.5 over under.
Must want to take the under. I probably take the over because you have obviously Freddie Freeman, Mookie Betts. You have Gavin Lux coming back. Pitching wise, you have Yamamoto. Granted, he didn't look at his first start against the Padres. Other than that, you have a really good cast, so I feel like definitely over on that one for sure.
I'm with you that I would take the over also. What is funny, though, is if at 102.5, if they went under at 100, that's still a pretty damn good season. You know what I mean? Like, so
yeah, absolutely, for sure.
So, I mean, that number's monstrous. So if you're in the betting public, you'd want to take the under, but they seemed, you know, last couple seasons, 107 wins, 105 wins, 100, you know, so yeah. And then also in the past couple of years, you could argue, well, the division that they're playing is a little bit tougher with Arizona and the Giants. It doesn't seem to phase the Dodgers whatsoever. I mean, they just continue to win. Mm-hmm. Coming in at number two, Atlanta at 101.5 over under.
Oh, the Braves. I probably at 101.5, probably take, might sound like a hot take, probably take the under on that one.
I would take the under also, but I would also probably, I mean, they're going to win the National League East. I don't think they need to win 105 games to do so. But yeah, I would take that under. Here's the interesting thing. After those two teams, both in the National League, the next two teams, there's a 10-game drop-off. And your next two, Houston at 93.5 and the Yankees at 90.5. What is it that you think the betting that the handicappers are seeing between the National League and the American League, where your top projected team is Houston at 93, which is 10 games worse than the two teams in the National League? Do you think it actually is a league thing, or is it just that the Dodgers and Braves are that much better?
I think it's just the Dodgers and Braves is that much better because you have like more star power on both teams and you have more people looking at both. So of course you're going to have the better say, they're going to have like more wins for those teams. So probably because the names and probably more people looking at the National League compared to the American League for those two.
And Yankees, 90.5, you going over or under on that?
Oh, definitely under. I'm not a Yankees fan. Taking the under on that every single day.
Yeah, leaving my my personal emotions out of it, I would take the under. I see the Yankees going 10 and 152. So, yeah. The defending champs, Texas, at 88.5. That's a tough one. And a lot of it depends on pitching health. Instead of giving me the over-under on Texas, do they make the playoffs again?
I think they do. The main thing is if they can have really good rookies come up, because you have Wyatt Langford coming up, breaking out of spring training, and then you have Evan Carter, who, if he can repeat his postseason success. And main thing, too, is if Jacob deGrom can actually stay healthy, because that can play a big factor also as well. But I feel like if everyone can stay healthy and then they can all be intact, and I feel like they can make a big postseason push. If not, win the AL West. And I feel like they could be back-to-back AL champs, honestly.
Interesting. Especially, you know, with Houston in their division, so on and so forth. You being a Cubs fan, me being a Mets fan, the Cubs, they got at 83.5. The Mets, they have at 81.5. I'll just say, so that's right at the Mason-Dixon line of 500. You're either on the better side of 500 or the worst side. Just tell me real quick, do you think both these teams finish on the better side or the worst side of 500?
I'll start first with the Mets. I feel like they could, first part of the season, I feel like they could have the potential to be above 500. But if they're about close to 500, they're probably going to trade people away. Unfortunately, you want to hear that you're going to probably trade Pete Alonso away. If they do that, they'll probably, I knew you hate that, but if they do that, I feel like they'll probably finish below 500. It's a rebuilding year for them, with Kodo Senga, everybody else, their whole pitching staff, like I said, Pete Alonso, everybody else. I feel like it's a whole rebuilding year for them, but yeah, definitely finish below 500. But on the other hand, with the Cubs, definitely looking up with prospects coming up, Pete Crow Armstrong, Alexander Canario. Then you have, what's his name? Over from Japan, pitcher from Japan, we have him. A whole bunch of bright side. I feel like we'll definitely finish above 500.
I think you will.
Definitely based, kind of biased.
I think you will because of your division.
oh, yeah.
Which is the NL Central is, you know, just like the NFC South in the NFL, where it's like, well, someone might finish above 500, but they'll be crowned champion, I guess. So I think the Cubs are good for 85, 90 wins and possibly the division there. The last couple I would just mention, you don't have to tell me the totals on these. I just thought these were interesting. The Angels at 72.5 in a post Otani world. I would, you know what? I would take the overs on that. If I really was a degenerate and needed to bet something, I would do that. I think the pressure off that team with him gone, I think they can muster out some wins there, but they do play in a very tough division. And then last but not least, the teams that are last and least, the worst ones they have there, Colorado 59.5 and Oakland 57.5. I'm calling these two teams the darlings of the year. The race to disgrace. Who can do worse? Do you see either one of these teams breaking 70?
I mean, the A's have some upside, honestly, but I don't see them breaking it. And with the Rockies, you can get some wins from out of Coors Field, but I don't see any of them breaking that, no.
Oakland's upside is called Las Vegas. So that's yeah, they're already got their mind set on that. They're set on that, which I think, you know, personally, I don't like the A's leaving Oakland at all, but it is what it is. They're going to be built the Death Star too, you know, which if I don't know if you've seen this online, what that field's projected to look like, but it's quite impressive and anyone and everyone would want to play there, which is weird.
Oh yeah. It definitely looks way nice. Yeah.
All right, before we get you out of here, give me your predictions for the upcoming seasons. Who's winning? Who's going to be a disappointment? What are your thoughts?
I'd probably say my AL team probably be the Rangers again. And my NL team probably – I'm going to have the rematch. I'm going to have D-backs, Rangers. I love both teams. Both teams are young. Both teams are hungry and ready. Surprising team. Surprisingly, will probably be the Royals because they have a lot of upside, a lot of people coming up. So I feel like Royals definitely upside.
Okay. Any final thoughts?
Nothing much, but let's play ball.
Let's do it. I can't wait. First pitch is in just a little over 48 hours or a little less than 40 hours, something like that. Logan Pierce, thanks for coming in and joining in on the JLSBX. You have yourself a good day there, bud.
Hey, man, thank you so much for having me.
The one constant through all the years, Ray, has been baseball. America has rolled by like an army of steamrollers. It's been erased like a blackboard, rebuilt and erased again. But baseball has marked the time. This field, this game, is a part of our past, Ray. It reminds us of all that once was good, and it could be again. Oh, people will come, Ray. People will most definitely come.
Like what you're hearing, share us, tell a friend, and spread the word. Don't be a fucking bastard.
That's right, we're back at the JLSBX, the Josh Lamb Sportsball Explosion. Thanks for listening, thanks for sharing, thanks for doing what you do. I'm going to get out of here today. It was a fun show today. We talked, went over some March Madness there. We went over some NFL free agency. The listener polls, you think I'd never done this before. The listener polls, what team cost you your perfect Final Four? Most votes went to, not surprisingly, to Auburn, Baylor there too, and Kentucky. Other than that, the rest of you are geniuses. I want to give a big shout out to Dennis Brown and Logan Pierce for joining me today. It was a good time. We'll see you next time. We'll do better. Hey, be good to each other. Don't cost nothing.
Yeah, well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.